Hey, Damian Mason here with a question before we hop into this episode of The Business of Agriculture. If you farm for a living, you employ a lot of amazing technology, from your inputs that you put into the soil to the tractor that you sit in, your combine, and the amazing data that it harvests. But has your soil analytics kept up technologically with everything else in your farming operation? I would venture to say that no, it is not. Sure, you check for your nitrogen, your phosphorus, your potassium, your micronutrients as well. But what about disease pressure? Do you know what diseases and what pests you're going to face next year? No, you don't. But you can now figure that out with Pattern Ag's predictive analytics. Think about it. They can tell you now with testing what the likelihood of facing nasty diseases, things like cyst nematode or sudden death syndrome, what the likelihood of you having this in your field. Then you know how to prepare, how to treat, and where to invest your money. It's using technology to make you bigger yields and therefore make you bigger money. Go to www.pattern.ag to learn more. They are pioneering the way in predictive agronomy. Well, greetings and thanks for being here for another fantastic episode of The Business of Agriculture. Today, we're talking about the reality of China, or should I say the threat of China, and asking the question, can North American agriculture live without China? Maybe it's not even a question. Frankly, I'm going to go through an entire episode here telling you why we damn sure better learn to live without China. And I know I'm a little bit on the fringe when it comes to agriculture. In fact, for at least 15 years now, every agricultural function we have been to, you and me, the other speakers, get up and talk about China, China, China. All the commodities people, all the numbers people talk about. And of course, every hack agricultural economist beginning about 20 years ago would get up and pontificate about the great opportunity with China. You know, if every Chinese resident were to eat one more cheeseburger per week times 1.4, so basically you just took everything, a half a pound of burger, and multiply it times 1.4 billion people, and all of a sudden, good God, look at this, blue sky, China's going to be here forever, produce all you want, yada yada. I was very cautious and even skeptical of this whole thing years ago, and I'm going to tell you why I believe now is the time for us to seriously wean ourselves off of China. Admittedly, if you are a listener, you know that we've talked about this before. In episode 125, during the whole coronavirus pandemic lockdown rage, I talked about China being bad for our health, and I talked about everything from the Asian carp that have destroyed the Great Lakes ecosystem to the Asian horned beetle and the emerald ash borer, which have done devastating things to the hardwood forest in places like the Midwest where I live. In fact, I own 65 acres of hardwood timber. I manage it professionally, and I can tell you that we have lost a tremendous amount of value because of the bugs that came over from China and have riddled our hardwood species. Then we can talk about things like influenza outbreaks, African swine fever that have a lot of, if not roots, certainly have a lot of ramp up in China. So anyway, that was in China Bad for Our Health, episode 125. You can go back and listen to it. In episode 134, I covered with my co-host of the Business of Ag Success Group, Todd Thurman, coronavirus, the reason for our decoupling from China. But this has been a couple of years ago since we've hit on the China subject, and now, more than ever, it's time for us to have a very serious dialogue in North American agriculture. And I keep saying North American because I'm going to tie Canada into this. In fact, I'm coming to you from a hotel room in Winnipeg where I spoke at an agricultural function here, and I talked about some real things with numbers. Canada is going to be, I'm absolutely convinced, walking down the same aisle with us as it pertains to the China situation. I don't know how they can't. So we'll get into that when we talk about some numbers. But let's go ahead and get into the reality. Okay, it was about a month ago, China's floating surveillance balloons over the North American continent. Again, how do you decouple from China if you're the United States and not expect that Canada is going to be caught in somewhat of crossfire? And I'm saying that metaphorically right now, at least. The balloon came over the Aleutian Islands in Alaska, then it drifted through the Northwest Territories and Yukon Territories of Canada, somewhere in the Northwest up there, the very uninhabited parts, and then it drifted down to Montana and then spent a number of days lingering over the United States of America. So Canada was obviously impacted by this as well. And you're saying, okay, Damian, big deal. We all heard about that. What's that have to do with agriculture? Well, if this isn't sort of the canary in the coal mine, if this isn't sort of the proof that, hey, we're really now on a point where it's not just a pissing match at some sort of trade negotiation, they full-blown are testing us. Meaning the Chinese Communist Party believes that right now the United States is weak, is apparently unprepared to battle, whether it's economically, politically, or even militarily. And I think this is a very bad situation for us to be in terms of a country and in terms of an industry. Giving you some numbers here in a little bit, but let's just go ahead and admit that this is a bad look for us. You can say, well, we spy on them, etc. Yeah, that's true. But this was like a blow over the bow. This was like a test shot. What's going to happen? And of course, very little happened. Okay, we shot down the balloon, but it took 9 days to happen or 7 days to happen, etc. This is what I think we maybe have become complacent about. We in the United States have thought forever that a communist China would become capitalized, which they have. It was state-run versions of capitalism, state-run versions of bringing in large multinational corporations, the Apples of the world or the Volkswagens, and then dictating to them the rules and then allowing them to use a capitalist global marketplace to profit China. And then, of course, China said, you're also going to give us intellectual property, that which they handed over, and then that which they also stole. So my point here is we've been kind of suckered in thinking wrongly that if we just treated China like a Western country, treated them like we would Germany. Hey, let's do trade. Let's you sell us Audis and we will sell you California wine. This is great. And it's not quite like that, because what we've learned is China doesn't play by any of the rules that Western cultures play by. China doesn't adhere to any agreements. China doesn't do anything that you would expect a country that's evolving as an economic power to do, because you would think that eventually they might just, hey, this is really good, and think, hey, we're going to go ahead and stick with this whole growth through capitalism and get rid of this whole communist ideal. But it's not happened. Okay, so let's talk about why I think we've been suckered in, especially in agriculture. We are an export country in terms of agriculture. We have 333 million people. We grow a hell of a lot more product than 330 million people can consume. We've always been an export country, at least for the last 100 years, the modern agricultural era. Once we had the technology, the mechanization, and we were growing large amounts of product, we had surpluses. Beginning about 100 years ago, we started having surpluses. So then it's like, where can we go with this? So about the 1930s, 1940s, and then, of course, after World War II, is when the export thing really took off. Our technology was in place. Our manufacturing base was top of the world. We hadn't blown up our country or been blown up the way Europe and Japan had been. So all of a sudden, we've got the manufacturing base, we've got the agrarian base, we've got the productivity, we have the Mississippi River, we have deep ports on both sides of the country, we have a thriving rail system. Boom, this thing is setting up for us to become an export country, and we have been. The thing is, we got to a point then by the 80s where some other countries had learned how to grow stuff also. We talk about the grain embargo, if you're a historian and you like history like I do, that killed the agricultural market, particularly in wheat, when we embargoed wheat going to Russia, etc. in 1980 under Jimmy Carter. But that's really not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is Brazil came online, Argentina came online, other countries learned how to produce crops at a time when we had already thought that we were the only person, that country that could do that. And next thing you know, we had a big global surplus. There was a lot of other issues behind the crisis in the 1980s. Interest rates, of course, prices of land, over-leveraged assets. There's a bunch of things. But let's just talk about the reality that a bunch of production came online during that time frame. We tend to forget that in agriculture. A lot of production came online that led to the farm crisis of the 80s, because there was not just a glut here. It's not as though soybeans and corn were selling for six times as much in Europe as they were here, and we were the only country with a glut. There was a global glut. We had plenty of stuff, okay? That's one thing to remember about the 80s. So here we are. We're kind of just chipping along, and this new thing comes up. Starting in the 90s, China's starting to bring in Europe and American companies. Manufacturing. It became the factory floor for much of the Western countries. Countries like ours that had a high labor rate could then close a factory in somewhere like Huntington, Indiana, where I live, and move manufacturing to China, where all of a sudden, for a whole day's labor, you could get what used to pay for an hour of labor here in the United States. So companies moved and became set up contract manufacturing there. It all made sense in terms of profits for the companies. Very bad for the Rust Belt, but also good for the consumer that went to Walmart to buy cheap manufactured goods. This all started really, what, in the 90s, and then obviously got its zenith in the 2000s. The thing took off. So here we are, 2023. This has been going on for a good 20 years. It was really the early 2000s when the economic foothold, then this manufacturing base that happened in China, took off, and then they had money to improve their lives. And then for a long, long time, again, every hack ag economist had to stand in an ag meeting and do the same thing. Take 1 pound more per week of say, ground beef times 1.3 billion people, and boom, you had this number. And next thing you know, Dodge City, Kansas, entire processing facility at National Beef Plant will be consumed just by China. And we loved to hear that story because American agriculture, and I'm talking about Canada as well, North American agriculture loves to do one thing: produce the shit out of products. We are amazing at it. We make soybeans, we make corn, we grow wheat, we put pounds on cattle in feed yards, we can put 86 pounds of milk per day per cow in the bulk tank. We're good at ag. Look at our efficiency on hog production, etc. A bunch of this got a shot in the arm because China became this huge customer. They took the manufacturing proceeds. They took the money from all the stuff of them shipping over cheap crap to be sold at Walmart, which was very good for the American consumer. Cheap crap at the Walmart's very good for blue collar America. All of a sudden, you can go and get your, you know, go get your cargo shorts and get your kid a couple of toys for very inexpensive. You know, the price of stuff got cheap for American consumers, and that's because of China. I made the crack when I bought Mrs. Mason a little electric griddle, not even a little one, quite a big one, really. And I said, you know what? These are cheaper now than they were in the 1970s. When I was a kid, the neighbors who I thought were rich had this amazing electric griddle. Like, you could cook pancakes on it and all this. It was really a cool thing. And we didn't have one because only rich people had it. I said, it's cheaper now, a couple of years ago, than it was in the 1970s. That's because of China. So anyway, China took those proceeds and then improved their lifestyle. The American farmer loved it because all of a sudden we sold more product. This is all good. This has happened a lot, right? Brazil threw in more acres, you know, as they always do. Go out and plow up some more acres of rainforest or of prairie grassland and turn it into soybeans. This is what happened. We basically fell into this huge new increase in demand, and it was because of calories consumed per day per Chinese resident. Population growth had a little bit to do with it during that time frame, but China's population hasn't been growing. It was the other parts of the country, the world, that were growing a little bit. It was mostly just an increase in consumption. So here's the thing. We got addicted to that. We loved it because it gave us license to do what we love to do in agriculture, and that's produce stuff. Here's what we didn't think. The whole time we were just producing this stuff, we didn't think, wow, we might be feeding the beast. And this is my concern. Giving you some numbers that I promised you. And I know, by the way, you're saying, Damien, you're getting a little out there. I've heard your stuff on China before. Now, this is very different from what I talked about before, because I'm telling you that I'm going to make the case that we absolutely overestimate the need to have China in our sphere. We overestimate the need, the absolute dire situation we've been without them as a customer. And we also tend to, shall I say, be short-sighted about this in American agriculture. We think that somehow they're going to stay around and it's not going to change anyhow. And I'm here to tell you, they're not going to be our customer 3 years from now anyhow. I won't hold you up. I'm going to tell you right now the reasons, then I'll give you the numbers. Before we go to commercial, I'm going to tell you right now the reason that we need to wean ourselves off of China. They have never fulfilled any agreement they have ever made. They steal relentlessly from us, perpetually, consistently, and without remorse or even hiding it, they steal from us. There was only about 5 years ago at a Monsanto facility in Iowa, Chinese nationals were crawling around under fences to steal technology on germplasm. That's only the least of things that they've stolen from us. Another reason we're going to have to wean ourselves out of there, China wants to dominate us and the world. China wants to dominate us and the world. You got to ask yourself a question. Is that acceptable? And can our agricultural base prevent that from happening? They will not be our customer 3 years from now. That's the other reason we have to wean ourselves off of China. And frankly, we might be at war with China in the next few years. And frankly, we might be already. Those are the reasons that we must wean ourselves off of China. I'll give you a little background on each of those. But before I do that, I want to remind you, if you are an agricultural producer, you have questions. You probably are groping around trying to find answers. For God's sakes, use this wonderful app called AgVisor Pro. It's an app that goes on your smartphone. All you do is pull out your smartphone and go to the App Store and just type in AgVisor Pro. My buddy Rob Syke, entrepreneur, agricultural guy, invented this thing. He said, you know what? He did some research. 19% of a farmer's time is spent trying to ascertain answers to questions. Why don't you shorten your distance and time on getting the information you need to become productive. You can find other experts, people that actually know the answer to the question. Hey, I've got a ragweed problem. I've got a persistent weed problem that these weeds are all, they're herbicide resistant. I don't know what the hell to do. There's an agronomist or a weed eradication expert on AgVisor Pro. Find that person by typing in and finding that person, and all of a sudden you can have a conversation directly with someone that has been in your shoes that can answer your questions and help you make money. If you shorten time and distance, you make money. That's what my buddy Rob Sykes says. He's absolutely right. AgVisor Pro. It's an app put on your phone, AgVisor Pro. Go on there, and you can, by the way, be an expert also. You can then all of a sudden be sought out, and you can even charge for your answers. AgVisor Pro as an exchange of information site for agriculture. All right. So I gave you the reasons of why we should finally pull the plug on this. And you're saying, Damon, should we just stop selling stuff? No, I'm not advocating that. I'm just telling you it's going to happen anyhow. That's the thing. People get it wrong. They're like, hey, Damien, what are you trying to say, man? You're all about business. You're trying to say that if China wants to buy a shipment of wheat off of us, if China wants to keep buying our soybeans, should we not sell it to them? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's time to keep developing other markets and stop prioritizing China. You see, it became very easy for American agriculture to prioritize China because it was already there. It kind of reminds you of the person that's naturally gifted at doing push-ups. Then they do push-ups all the time. And it's like, hey, man, that guy works really hard doing push-ups. Well, that guy works really hard at doing what's already easy for him. It was easy for us to take on this ascendant economy where the caloric consumption per resident increased by like 50% over the last 15 years. Of course, we now have a country with a bunch of money and a bunch of people that are eating more. Yeah. And it's also a big country with 1.4 billion people. So, of course, it made sense. It was easy for us to develop them as a customer. Essentially, they came calling. But they do not want to be our customer for long. They want to be our replacement. You've heard me say this. If you've been in my audience, I've pointed this out all the time. China does not want to be our customer. They want to be our replacement. Right now, we're about 22% of the global economy. Depends on what you look at and depends on which year. But right now, call it the United States of America, about 22% of the global economy. We still are the dominant player on the block. We used to be more. We used to be more than 25% of the global economy. With only 4% of the global population, we still swing a pretty big bat. China has continued to grow in relation to us. They're like 17% of the global economy right now. They're inching up on us. Now, they've stagnated a little bit. That should concern you. Not because they won't pay their bills. Concern you because what if things get bad in China? You ever see a country that's ascendant, that's also ruled by very power-hungry authoritarians that all of a sudden not meet their objective? Sometimes then they become kind of twitchy with their trigger finger. That's a concern that I have for China. If their economy continues to struggle, which I think it's struggling way worse than they are letting on, then all of a sudden they get a little twitchy. Oh, damn it, we were supposed to overtake the United States. Now all of a sudden we're stagnant. Maybe it's time to flex our muscle. What do you think's happening in Taiwan right now? They took over Hong Kong a couple of years ago. Now they've got their eye on Taiwan. Why would they want that? They want Taiwan because Taiwan has economic vibrance. Taiwan has a semiconductor hold on the rest of the world. All of a sudden, China gets economic vibrance to help along their more stagnating economy. They get ingenuity because God knows the commies don't have that. They get innovation. And most importantly, they get control of the semiconductors in an era where semiconductors might be the new gold or might be the new oil. That's what's going on. That should concern you. that should concern all of us, not just in ag. Let me give you some numbers. So I've told you that I'm convinced that China is our adversary. They're not our ally. They never have been. I believe they want to be our replacement. They do not want to be our customer. They never really have wanted to be our customer. They're essentially using us to fuel their machine. Think about it. Buy food from the countries that can supply it. Grow your economy. Grow your base. Get to where you don't need them. And more importantly, look at what they've done. They've taken the money from our imports, meaning the stuff we buy off of them, and applied it to great measure at replacing us. You maybe haven't heard of this. The Belt and Road Initiative. It's been going on for 10 years. Some people call it the New Silk Road. The point is China's leader, Xi, is very aggressive and wants to, obviously, a stated agenda, a stated objective is to overtake the United States. They've been taking their money and deploying it other places, meaning other parts of the world. So the Belt and Road Initiative that's been going on for a decade now means taking the proceeds from, say, selling us cheap manufactured goods that we buy at Walmart and deploying it into infrastructure development in third world countries. China goes to countries that they can control. Places not like the United States, not even Brazil, because they almost had a shoe in there. And I'm gonna get to that in a minute. China then takes billions of dollars and drops it in the lap of these developing countries that are starved for infrastructure. And then those countries, then China develops railroads, ports, roads, highways, bridges, refrigeration, reliable electricity, and then slowly goes about exploiting those countries for their natural resources. So China will hardly need our crops if they can get Ghana developed enough to exploit them to steal the food crops from those countries. Those countries are starved for any money and capital infrastructure improvements, so they bow over. It's basically economic colonialism. In the old days, if you wanted to take over a country, you put your gunboats outside their shores and bombed them until you took it over. Then you exploited their resources. Well, China's not doing that with bombs. They're doing that with money. They're doing that with money that frankly comes from us or Canada or Europe, or wherever else they dump cheap manufactured goods and cheap government-sanctioned and government-sponsored steel, for instance. Right now, China and the sales to them, this is important information because you maybe have heard these numbers, but most people have not. We sold to them $154 billion last year. We sold to them. China bought $154 billion of all goods from the United States. Everything. And I'm talking from, manufactured goods to machinery, from Caterpillar, to John Deere, to soybeans. Everything, not just agriculture. $154 billion. We bought off of them $537 billion. So we talk about the trade imbalance. It's been there for a long, long time. It's about 3.5 times. It's about 3.5 times, yeah, 3.5, 3.3 times. $154 billion that they bought off us, we bought $537 billion off of them. You're saying, well, that didn't seem quite right. Well, the reality is we don't manufacture kickballs. We don't manufacture plastic hula hoops for your kid that you can buy at the store at Dollar General. We don't make those things here. So we buy a lot of cheap manufactured goods from them. It's not necessarily bad, except for this imbalance has been going on for a long, long time. Now, let's talk about the ag portion of that. The ag portion of that is about $36 billion. So $36 billion of the $154 billion, that's 23%. So almost a quarter of everything that they buy from us, dollar-wise, is ag. Okay? So ag's a pretty big, considering that ag is this little industry out here that we know is really important, but the average consumer in America doesn't realize, almost a quarter of what China buys off of us in terms of dollar value comes from the factory, from the farms and the fields in the United States of America. By the way, to compare that, in Canada is sold about $82 billion. This is Canadian dollars, which, of course, do the adjustment on the exchange rate. $82 billion was the sales for Canada, of which $7.8 billion went to China. Canada's second largest customer in terms of agriculture, I'm talking agriculture, is China at about 9% of all their ag exports. Now, here's the thing. The United States of America sent $196 billion worth of ag products all around the globe last year. $196 billion. By the way, if you're listening to this and you want to see a neat graphic, it's from the United States Department of Agriculture. My editor is going to put it up right here. on the YouTube. So you can go to the Damian Mason channel and you can see the graphic. It's a United States Department of Agriculture print off. It's a pretty cool thing. And it just talks about our big exports. We sent $196.4 billion worth of ag products all over the world. And that's every country, you know, from Turkey to Mexico to wherever. And of that, 18.5% went to China. That's $36 billion. So our ag exports last year were up 14% year over year, 2022 over 2021. Why? Pandemic reopening, commodity prices were worth a bit more. That accounts for quite a bit of that increase right there. But what you're saying to me is, well, Damian, $36 billion went to China? Yeah, that's 18% of all of our ag exports. And also, ag accounts for 23% of all of the imported exports that we send just to China, okay? So it's not insignificant, I realize that. But let's go ahead and look at this a different way. 18% of all ag exports globally from the United States went to China. And we think somehow we just couldn't live without that. Let's look at this a different way. China pledged during the whole battling over tariffs with Donald Trump 5 years ago that they would buy $50 billion worth of ag products from us. They vowed, they pledged, they promised, and they agreed that they would buy $50 billion worth of agricultural products from the United States if we just would back off on the tariffs and keep buying their cheap crap, their manufactured goods. And of course, we did what we always do, and we said, oh, we can't lose China. Better just go ahead and agree with them, whatever they want. And you know what? They've never come anywhere close to their $50 billion. Last year was their record at $36 billion. That, again, is nowhere close. That's 72% of what they've pledged. They have never fulfilled any agreement they've ever made with us, agricultural or otherwise. Okay, so you're saying, well, that's still a big chunk. That's 18.5% of all ag exports go to China. I say, okay, you're right. So you think that we can't live without them. Let me give you a couple of other numbers. And if you are, if you've moved over to the YouTube, you can see this graph. But if you're driving down the road listening, I'll just share it with you. Canada, where I'm sitting right now, has 40 million people. 40 million as opposed to 1.4 billion. Canada bought $28 billion worth of our agricultural stuff. Canada, which, what is that? About 1/40th of the size of China? 1/37th of the size of China? Canada is 78% as big of a customer. Guess who's tied with Canada? Mexico. Yes, Mexico, with less than 1/10th of the population of Canada. Mexico is tied with Canada. I'm sorry, with China. So think about this. Mexico has about 130 million people, 1.3, 1.4 billion over in China. Mexico is 1/10 the size of China. And Mexico is still our tied for second with our as our ag export country, $28 billion. Now you know, if you listen to this episode that I put out not too long ago, how stupid, how foolish it was for the National Corn Growers Association and the United States Department of Agriculture to browbeat the country of Mexico and threaten legal action through the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, that if they don't buy our GMO corn, we're going to start causing trade problems. They are a huge customer. And all they wanted was for us to grow non-GMO corn, and we threatened to cause legal issues over this? If someone wants to buy non-GMO corn and pay you a premium, you should probably just grow non-GMO corn and let them pay you the premium, because somebody else will. So Mexico is a huge market for us. Mexico has developed into a very significant agricultural customer. Again, tied for second. With 1/10 of the population of China, they're at 78% as big of a customer as China. And you mean to tell me you think we can't live without China? Look what we've done with Mexico. Now imagine the way things are in England, Britain, you know, the United Kingdom. It goes by a lot of names, right? They're on the outs with the European Union. They obviously have a common tie with North America. Well, they still have a very big tie with Canada. Why would we not be courting the United Kingdom right now, who's on the outs with the European Union, and saying, let's go ahead and do better business in terms of our agricultural trade? Yeah, they have farms in Great Britain, but they don't have near the capacity, near the productive capacity that we do in North America. You see, we are missing out on opportunities with other countries that we should be emboldening and working stronger with on our relations. I'll give you some other numbers from this whole situation. As I said, Canada, exports to the United States of America, $36 billion. Okay. We are, what is that about, we're about 4.5 times the size of an export market as China. China's their number two ag export country. So you think Canada is thinking to themselves they could never live without China? Well, I don't know. They're about 9% of exports for ag for Canada. So Canadian ag uses China for about 9% of their exports. We use them for about 18% of our exports in terms of dollar value. We both can live without China and damn sure going to have to. Why do I keep talking about Canada? I believe that we both have obviously a lot of commonality, common language with the exception of Quebec, a common history. More importantly, a common border that goes for thousands of miles. We have the longest undisputed border in modern history. We also have a military in the United States that can help support Canada. We have an economy that is obviously tremendously large compared to Canada's, but Canada's no slouch. They're a G8 country. Canada and the United States can continue to walk down this road. It would be very difficult for China to be in an adversarial position with us and even a warlike situation with us and not have Canada on our side. This will, China's posturing with balloons and flying warplanes over Taiwan is now beginning to make countries take sides. It is time for the United States of America and our agricultural forces to rally behind our allies. China is not one of them. All right, let me go ahead and give you the reasons I say all this. Why we should get used to, accept, or even perpetuate a finish, a being done with China. It's because they've never fulfilled any agreement they've ever agreed to, ever. Again, think about this. We're at $15 beans and $7 corn, and they still were only $36 billion to a pledge of $50 billion. Even at the highest commodity markets we've had in a long, long time, they still are nowhere close to being what they've agreed to. They steal from us. That's pretty obvious. Would you want to do business with a company in a country that steals from you? Anyone you do business with that is behind your back stealing from you to replace you and get to where they don't need you as a customer, why would you want to continue to do business with them? The domination. And this is a call to, I think, everybody's sensibilities. The United States of America has its flaws, God knows. But we're not ruled by an authoritarian communist party, a one-party authoritarian state, a one-party authoritarian state that in its history has caused the Great Leap Forward. You remember hearing about that? Let me tell you about the Great Leap Forward. It was Mao Zedong in the 1940s and 50s, when the communists came into power through the 1960s. This whole massive idea that they were going to revolutionize and, communize and then, of course, collectivize all of the resources. About 50 million Chinese people starved to death, great starvation, because of how this entire new communist ideal was instituted. Forced sterilization. When China forced the one-child policy onto its populace in 1980, fearing that their population was going to get so big it could never feed itself, they forcibly aborted and forcibly sterilized women. Is this the kind of country that you would want to replace the United States of America? Communists don't think like us. Look at what they did during COVID. Literally welded residents into their apartment buildings. Locked them down. We had the same issues in the United States, but to a very, very small exponential amount. I mean, exponentially different in China. Is this the sort of country that you would, is this sort of regime that you would want replacing the United States of America as a global superpower? So this goes far deeper than just agriculture. I think it's important to realize that communists don't think like us. Communists want to be in charge. As my friend Ryan Moe always says, communists are stubborn. They'd rather be in charge than have a thriving economy. There's also this very reality, a big reality, that I don't think that China is going to be our customer a few years from now anyhow. Why not go ahead and start to embrace this? You know, do you want to go cold turkey? Do you want to be ill-prepared? Trust me, ask any business person who's reliant on one big customer, and then all of a sudden that customer goes away, how hard the adjustment is. Oh shit, I didn't see this coming. Now I've got to go and figure out where to get more revenue. I haven't even made a sales call in 5 years, and now I got to find out who's going to do business with me. I don't know. Maybe you should have been working on it. It's kind of the old thing of the best time to plant a tree is 30 years ago. The best time to plan for a sale 5 years from now is today, so you can already have a cultivated customer base. And here's another part of it. What if we're already at war? Well, Damon, you're getting kind of crazy. Well, we've got the balloons. What about what's going on in Washington, D.C.? Why are we not reacting more? What if we're compromised? What if the Communist Party has so much dirt on our leaders? What if the Communist Party is so infiltrated? Maybe they're controlling what we see. Maybe they're controlling outcomes. Maybe they're controlling some of the things that look like accidents, be it derailings or electrical grid shortages, blackouts, problems with our pipelines, intellectual property that was stolen, data breaches. You see, war won't necessarily be another Pearl Harbor. War might be what you're seeing right now. Chaos behind the scenes, destruction of a dominant economy, a dominant and sometimes fragile, or shall we say, naive economy. And that's what concerns me and should concern you also. So ask yourself this question if you know anything about history. If it was the 1930s all over again, and you know, we've got Germany that's building up the Nazi war machine in Europe, and we've got Imperial Japan that's putting their forces together and wants to control Asia. In fact, they did. They controlled the Korean Peninsula. They had taken over China in many regards back in the 1930s. What if it was Japan that floated a balloon over the North American continent and it was 1940, just maybe a year or so before Pearl Harbor? Would we be this naive? Would we be this accepting? Hey, it's okay. They buy soybeans off of us. What if it was the 1930s and Hitler's Nazi Germany was the biggest manufacturer of all the manufactured stuff that we buy at Dollar General? Would that be okay? And more importantly, would we still be sending barges of soybeans, all the other agricultural products to Nazi Germany, feeding their machine, saying, oh, well, they're a good customer? Those are the questions I think that we need to finally ask. Yeah, it was good while it went, and I get it. It 50%ed our increase in soybean production over the last 20 years. You can largely say that we've gone from about 3 or 3.2 bushels to 4.5 billion bushels of soybeans. It's given us a great export market and let us do what we do, which is grow a lot of stuff. But this is to our own detriment. And is it time to make these adjustments? And I believe that it is. All right. I gave you some numbers. I told you if you are listening to this and you want to check out the thing, go and check it out on my YouTube, Damian Mason channel. If you want to check out more of this stuff, I have more where that came from. I'm going to be covering some China issues more as things continue to be, in my opinion, very dicey. A Wall Street Journal article just yesterday that China is going to devote 7.2% of an increase to their military. Did you hear that? They have a standing military army of about 2.2 to 2.5 million soldiers. They're going to increase military spending by 7.2% this year. Their economy is expected, they say, to grow by 5%. They're going to outsize their new spend on military to about 50% more than what their economy is growing by. What does that tell you? It tells you you should be prepared. The last reason I want to tell you about is time to decouple from China is look what we learned during the pandemic. When we needed product, China learned that when they have a country over the barrel, it's a good thing for China. When somebody needs their manufactured goods or can't have the thriving economy without what they supply, that's very good for China. It makes them stronger. As I've been telling my audiences for a number of years here, when I drove by the GM plant and saw trucks stacked like cordwood out there, new trucks that couldn't be sold because they lacked a semiconductor chip. If a $50,000 pickup truck can't be sold, can't be operated without a chip, what's the chip worth? The answer, of course, is $50,000. What if it's an ingredient to a herbicide, insecticide? You see, China's big on chemical manufacturing. We put a lot of chemical manufacturing there. Easier environmental rules, no EPA to deal with, cheap labor. Why not just let them make our stuff? Then we'll ship it over here and put it in containers and spread it on our fields. What if they realize that we can't grow crops as efficiently as we once did without the ingredients that they manufacture for us? They have us over a barrel. You understand where this goes. It's time, more than time, for North American agriculture to learn to live without China. The sooner the better. Maybe I'll sound like this old kook 3 years from now. But based on the tea leaves and based on what I'm seeing and what you're seeing, is it really reasonable or is it unreasonable what I see happening? History repeats itself. I'm concerned, and you should be too. Till next time, my name is Damian Mason. This is The Business of Agriculture. Well, that concludes another fantastic episode of The Business of Agriculture. This episode was brought to you by Pattern Ag. You know, everybody in agriculture understands the importance of soil health. We also keep an eye on our soil better than we ever did through advanced soil testing. But what if there was a company that provided predictive analytics? Not just checking out nutrients and all the elements that are in there, but also could tell you the degree of risk you face with disease and pest pressure. That's right. Pattern Ag can do that. They actually can tell you, hey, you're going to have a real issue here. You can preemptively, proactively treat for corn rootworm or cyst nematode or sudden death syndrome before the problem actually starts costing you yield. Go to pattern.ag. That's www.pattern.ag to find the nearest rep that can help you start doing better for your soil.